Hey everybody, this is day three of E3, RFN at E3 2017. The war of attrition is over, and the last men standing are myself, John Lindemann, Michael Cole, Aaron Kaluska, and Jared Rosenberg. And here we are, we're going to give our thoughts on the last day of the show. It was more of an open day, so we just kind of roamed around the show floor. And we're also going to talk about the Mix event, which was last night. It was a media and developer sort of event. A private event hosted at a hotel near here. So, Aaron, you want to kick us off talking about that?
Yeah. There were, I think, maybe seven indie games that were on the floor there that will be coming to Switch. And I'll talk about Yoku's Island Express first. This was a really interesting and sort of beautiful mix of pinball and platforming. You start off, you're pushing this ball around. You're tasked as a mailman or something like that. You then end up in this sort of labyrinthine area, and there are these bumpers that are shaped like pinball bumpers, and you actually can fling yourself and the ball around this world, and you have to complete different tasks in a sort of 2D maze type of platformer. But then there's a lot of pinball mixed in. Pretty seamlessly into the world itself, so yeah, it's very different.
Yeah, and these are all indie games. So specifically, that was the whole purpose of the event is to get these indie games some exposure. So if you haven't heard of any of these, that's probably why.
They had also, some games people have heard of.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, so, and they had developers, absolutely. The games and they had devs that were working on games that had made stuff that we've definitely heard of. So
let's see. I guess one of the ones that you definitely have heard of is Runner 3.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the first time that we've been able to see that, sequel to Bit Trip Runner and Runner 2. It's pretty similar to Runner 2, I would say, but, it's kind of next level graphics and I guess a lot of different environments. Got Charles Martinet reprising the narrator. Yep. You guys want to say anything else about that?
The physics are slightly different. I'm not an expert on Runner 2, but it seemed like the float jump was a little more pronounced. You can hold down and kind of drift down more. Was there branching paths in Runner 2, or is that new to Runner 3? It seemed like there was a piece where you could like,
push down. 2 had it.
Yeah, 2 had it? Okay. I don't know, just more runner. I mean,
were some of those bonus stages new or slightly modified?
Yeah, they seem. I didn't play all of Runner 2, but I don't recognize some of the mechanics that they had in some of those bonus stages, so I think that's new.
Yeah, they had at least 3 stages you could choose from. I chose one that was like Uncle Cheese's
cheese ball
or something.
The cheese seller.
Something like that. Anyways, it was hard. It was a very difficult game.
Well, and they have a counter for how many times you die.
Yeah.
So it's like take 80. You're like, oh god.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I made the mistake of playing it without sound for the first little part of it, so which is not great. But yeah, I mean, it's Runner. It's another iteration of that. So I mean, if you're a Runner fan, you'll definitely be looking forward to it. The other game we played quite a bit of was Shakedown Hawaii, which is made by the guys that was it the guy that did Retro City Rampage?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I really like this game. It harkens back to a lot of like the 80s arcade 16-bit graphics for a lot of the artwork. And of course, as the title implies, set in Hawaii and you are shaking people down. But I couldn't quite get the plot down. I think it was like you're an aging actor who is somehow trying to, because there was a lot of that, like you're trying out for TV shows and stuff like that, and you can buy like different outfits and different hairstyles and stuff like that within the plot make the character look younger and stuff like that. But yeah, you are basically shaking people down sort of mob style, taking over businesses and stuff like that. And it's that same like overhead view where you can hop into cars and sort of almost like GTA Chinatown Wars kind of stuff. Very, very cool. You can get different weapons like flamethrowers and stuff like that and wreak havoc and kill police and then whatever while they're chasing you down.
Yeah, I kept catching myself on fire and dying.
Yeah, the dev on hand, he had to help me. He had to help me with the final mission that he said is probably going to be placed actually later in the game because it's pretty hard when you do it. You have to go in, you have to take a flamethrower and set a whole bunch of stuff on fire but you have to watch out that you don't set yourself on fire. And there's a little pool in the middle of this like area with a bunch of these stalls, and you have to hop in the pool if you get caught on fire. So it's pretty difficult, but it's funny. It has a lot of like kind of like one-liners, like you know, you're not going to be able to, you know, walk your dog. Your dog walking business won't do too well with two broken legs, that kind of thing, right? So that's a really, really cool game.
Yeah, and the meta game on that was really interesting too, because you're almost basically trying to take over the entire city. You know, you're kind of buying businesses, but the way you buy them is by shaking down the original owners, and then you basically put them out of business and then like take over. So yeah, really interesting meta level on that.
Yep, yeah, it's cool. You can walk into their shops and talk to them, and then you destroy their entire shop, and then finally they relent and give you money. But yeah, that looks cool. And then we had Escapist 2. That was another one. So I think, Aaron, did you play that one?
I did not. I only saw the demo as well.
Okay, yeah, this was one where it's kind of difficult to actually play through the demo. Of course, this is a sequel to the original Escapist. And you are set in a prison, and you have to figure out a way out. And there's many different ways you can do that. There's kind of the first phase of the game is actually figuring out what tools you have at your disposal, and then actually figuring out how to put those tools, chain them together, to actually get out of the prison. Overhead view, very, very funny, a lot of humor in this. You can, you know, join the prison band and distract the guards that way. You can dig holes and then cover it up with a desk, and then, you know, kind of time when the guards come through and stuff like that. So there's a lot of humor in that one.
Yeah, what sounded really good, the developer was telling us that it's basically seamless multiplayer, where you can play locally with another buddy, or you can go online, or you can play locally and online for up to four players. And it's very collaborative. It's very much a collaborative game, so it's basically trying to solve a puzzle. There's more than one way, it sounds like, to solve any given escape, so it sounds like there would be some replayability there, too, in terms of, you know, different ways of solving the problem. So it sounds like something that definitely, if you got a group of friends, you can sink your teeth into. So it sounds cool.
Yeah, and there's going to be local and online multiplayer, and it's kind of drop-in, drop-out multiplayer. I asked him specifically about trolls, which is something I always wonder about games like this, with online multiplayer, and he said that you'll just be able to like kind of just kick somebody out of the game, and then it actually won't even disrupt the trolls game, because they'll just go back to playing one player. So it's very seamless. I think it's up to four players, I believe that's what
he said. I think he said four.
Yeah, four players. So you can actually work in concert to escape the prison. So it's a really cool concept. The one I spent some time with was Ironcast, which is a sort of Bejeweled clone, but it also works in some battle elements. It lets you can chain together different combos, and what you're doing is you kind of have this this tank. It's set 1886 is when it's you know set, so it's kind of like old England, and England is being attacked by France, and as tanks, England uses these kind of walking. Kind of like a steampunk mechs to fight other things, and I think I was fighting like a train for some reason, which seems strange to me now to say that. But yeah, you connect all of these different types of jewel-like items on the field, and that lets you get ammo. It lets you have coolant to cool your, you know, because as your tank does stuff, it generates heat. You have to cool it down, and then you can repair yourself and do all kinds of neat things. That's pretty cool. So it's fairly in depth. There's a lot of strategy involved, and you know, kind of you know, when you attack, when you don't attack, when you repair yourself and stuff like that. And you just move from battle to battle, and there's kind of a neat little story involved there.
We'll have some video of that soon. Yeah. I know Aaron has to leave very shortly. Yeah. Any final impressions?
Yeah. So there was one actually. We
Battleship Brigade.
No, actually, there was another one we forgot to put on our list. It was called Phantom Trigger.
Right.
I don't know if you guys play that one or not, but at the beginning, it looks very much like a ripoff of do you remember
last year?
Hyper Light Drifter. Yeah. Basically, it's they're calling it a hardcore neon slasher. and it has a sort of the similar transport teleport mechanic from a Hyper Light Drifter, but then there's a whole bunch of different weapons. There's like a big claw you can get. There's a whip where you can grab things and pull them in, as well as a sword. And it's very stylized and very difficult. And so you can kind of run through enemies, but then they'll block you pretty quickly from progressing just by being too difficult based on the whatever weapons you have. And that one's being made by Red Team, which they apparently made Divide by Sheep, if you've ever played that on Steam or not. Yeah, it's, they say it's kind of like a math game, but not exactly. So yeah, it seems like there will probably be some similar humor and stuff in this game, even though it's more of a cyberpunk world.
Okay, and the last one we have is Battleship Brigade. Who played that one? Anybody?
Battleship Brigade is the Iron Chef game. No.
Battleship Brigade.
Yeah, Battleship Brigade.
Battleship Brigade. I was saying Battleship.
Yeah.
I was like, that doesn't sound like an Iron Chef game at all.
I watched it footage of it, and it's definitely a very interesting game. We have direct capture, but it's basically Iron Chef, the video game, and you have two.
Aaron is leaving, everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us at E3, Aaron.
Another good E3.
Have a good flight.
Yeah. Sorry about that. But, yeah, no, so it's basically like Iron Chef. You play as one of the contestants. You're actually only versing a single person. Mm-hmm. And you have to go get... There is a special ingredient. If you've ever watched Iron Chef, you have a special ingredient that you have to make your dish using. And just in this game as well, you have a special ingredient that you have to use. But to get the ingredients, you have to actually do like a side-scrolling action level to go get the ingredients. And there are a whole bunch of enemies, and like you kill enemies and like look around for the special ingredient and the other ingredients you're going to use.
So is it kind of like an Iron Chef ActRaiser?
Maybe a little bit, yeah. Because there's and like ActRaiser, there's multiple different ways of playing the game. Because then once you get the ingredients, you have a more, I guess it was more like a puzzle game kind of thing where you actually make the dish.
Okay.
And it was interesting. Like there are a lot of rules. Like if you don't have the special ingredients, you automatically have 50% off like the amount of points you get and like that kind of thing. And it seems like it had a really crazy sense of humor and things, so I think it looks sort of fun. Yeah,
that's cool. That's really cool. Yeah, and all these games are for Switch, by the way. We didn't mention that off the bat, but these are all coming to Switch at varying times. Some of these guys, they couldn't necessarily give us, they couldn't really give us a date in the future, but they're all coming to Switch at some point. Speaking of a game like that, a game that Mike and I played, ironically, at the Xbox booth, which...
It's amazing to me that we got any games in the Xbox.
Yes,
that's amazing.
Multiple ironies there, and the fact that we even played a game at the Xbox booth because it was just jam-packed. It was a game called Unruly Heroes by, I believe, Magic. Is it Magic Design Studios?
That sounds right.
I think, yes.
Close.
So the way this game works, it's a beautiful-looking game. Kind of reminded us of what?
Is it Muramasa?
Muramasa a bit. Yeah, it looks a little bit like Muramasa. It has that kind of... The same kind of, I can't really describe the way that the monsters move.
It's almost like the paper cutouts that you're sliding around a little bit or something.
Yeah, it has that same look. And so it's based on the Journey of the West.
I didn't hear that
story. That's what he said, that ancient story. And that was a dog.
Apparently there's a dog.
Yeah, apparently there's a dog somewhere in here. But yeah, so it was based on that, and you—it's up to 4-player co-op at the same time.
Yeah, it's basically a brawler. I mean, there's some light puzzle solving. There was a room where you had to like destroy the enemies, and then you could kind of possess them and bring them to a kind of platforms to, unlock a big door for where it looked like there was a boss. But the demo cut off was kind of a teaser. But it's a 4-player brawler. I didn't strike me as like super novel, but at the right price, it could be a lot of fun. I have no idea what price point they're targeting, and it sounds like it maybe he's coming out first to Xbox. Maybe that's just the only one that he's confirmed as being a platform. But the developer has said that he really wants to make a version for Switch, and so he's reached out to Nintendo. And, he's working it. So
yeah, he said Xbox One is first, and then PS4, and then he said shortly after that Switch. So I think probably second quarter of next year, I think we should look for it on Switch, I would say.
But he was saying even like the Xbox one wasn't going to come out probably until early next year, it sounded like. So it's a ways out still.
Yep. So, but yeah, definitely look out for that. That's Unruly Heroes. And I guess, Jared, did you play anything else on the show floor of note?
Today, but you're saying at the indie mix or just in general?
In general today.
Nothing. I saw some more Sonic Mania. I personally didn't play it. We got to see Chemical Plant Zone Act 1, Act 2. Mm-hmm. That game I'm just so excited for.
It looks really good.
It feels really good. And, you know, someone was asking me earlier, you know, what was good besides Mario? And you know, my brain is so foggy right now because just lots of lines standing and stuff. But I think Sonic Mania is probably my second favorite game. I mean, it's not obviously a technical powerhouse or anything, but as far as like nailing the controls and the gameplay they were going for, I think it did a great job. And I went back and played it again today. I played the other Green Hill Zone, which I thought was going to be just a remake, but it was basically a brand new level that maybe they've shown before at other. Maybe at PAX East or something. But...
So the level they had on the show floor was Green Hill Zone Act 2. Mm-hmm. So the way the game works is the Act 1s, if it's a classic level, are very similar to their original structure with some new areas. Mm-hmm. But then the Act 2s are completely new and like different.
Yeah, so that was a lot of fun. I played as Sonic this time, and he has his jump dash, whatever they're calling it. Mm-hmm. That actually is pretty useful, because often when you're jumping, you don't... You know, you've lost your momentum because you're jumping vertically or whatever, and that lets you kind of hold down the jump button when you land, and it'll kind of dash you. That's pretty good.
Drop dash.
Yeah,
get it right.
Yeah.
That guy was very specific.
Man, I'm a Tails player, man. Come on. Screw Sonic, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
Miles Prower.
Miles Tails Prower.
Yeah. There's too much Sonic knowledge on this.
Lord.
On this podcast right now, I can't handle it.
I played Half Genie Hero. I think Johnny talked about it, but I had a lot of fun with it. Glad I checked it out. It's DLC content. But to be honest, I enjoyed playing as Risky Boots a lot more than the usual Shantae. Mm-hmm. So I actually went and bought the game right after I played it because I want the DLC mode. I mean, it feels a little bit more like Pirate's Curse, which, if you remember that game, Shantae was slowly collecting. Essentially Risky Boots' moves. Mm-hmm. So obviously there's some lineage there, but I just felt, you know, played smoothly. Obviously I'm not that familiar with level design, but it was cool. So if you already own it, definitely check out the DLC. I think it's a winner. I think they mentioned that if you buy the physical version of the game when it comes out, it'll come with the DLC.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Was there any other games you guys played today that...
Let's see. Well, I mean, I think we all played some Farming Simulator.
I took video, but I saw it more out of curiosity than anything else.
I don't know if we played it so much as poked at it.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I said, because I've never really played any Farming Simulator. I'm tangentially aware of it, but I sat down with it, and I didn't know what the heck I was doing. You have four different tractors that you can switch between. This was on the 3DS, by the way, which made it even weirder. So, yeah, we just pretty much sat down, and the first thing I said was, boy, I wish there was a dev here to walk me through exactly what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
I'm not a farmer by trade, so I really didn't know. I enjoyed driving around the big tractors. There were several fields. I was not able to till them. Mm-hmm. There's an overhead map. And there's several different things you could do with that seem farming related.
Yeah, the video looked interesting. I didn't take away anything from playing it, but there was a video playing right above it that showed off like what you could do, breed animals and all that stuff. So I'm like, okay, I mean, there's definitely stuff to do if you're into this. I mean,
it's definitely a game. There are game elements in Farming Simulator 18.
But we were not able to exercise any of those gaming mechanics.
Yeah, I think I'm probably more at like a goat simulator level right now. I think that's probably more my speed. So Farming Simulator, we really have nothing to offer you about that aside from the fact that, yes, it seems to simulate farming, confirmed.
We did, not Nintendo platform, we did check out Ni No Kuni, which... some listeners may be interested in Kuni 2, whatever the subtitle is. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't demo well on the show floor.
The way the demo was set up is that it was effectively two boss battles.
Yeah.
The one with this giant kind of like ancient Chinese style dragon. Mm-hmm. And the other one was just with this like kind of, you're in this arena fighting this random big dude.
Yeah, so the combat's a little bit different from the original game, but overall the mechanics are very similar. And you don't, you know, have monsters, at least in the demo, you didn't have monsters that you're like cast or you know, throw out to the field and you play as. Instead, you're just playing as your character and you have some other, you know, ally characters, which I don't think you can control. Maybe there was a control scheme I didn't find, but you know, you can charge up attacks, close, you know, melee attacks. It seemed like they charged up your magic meter, and then you could use magic skills to heal or, you know, throw a snowball from a distance, that kind of stuff. So, I mean, it seems like the, you know, the basics felt pretty good. Mm-hmm. It's a long, you know, bullet sponge fest kind of a thing for the E3 demo. I was kind of surprised they didn't have like a town to explore or something for one of the two stages on display.
So. I felt that the demos they had, we played it, we actually had a booth appointment, so we had free reign to stay on there as long as we want. But I could see why the lines were so long for Ni No Kuni.
Yeah.
Because that was just a long demo.
Yeah,
I mean, it felt much more geared towards being behind closed doors than being like out on the show floor. So, but I mean, it looked good. A talky game though.
Well, yeah, it's talky. I mean, very, you know, anime. I mean, even, you know, we say it's just two boss battles, but the one of them had kind of an intro sequence.
Yeah,
you walk around a little bit, and you know, just characters talking to each other. Looks beautiful. Artwork's great. I mean, as you'd expect from sequels to Ni No Kuni.
Yeah, it looks beautiful.
But, I mean, as far as, like, you know, world design or anything like that, it's really hard to tell from the demo.
Yeah.
I mean,
very close in.
I will say that I think they released the demo, E3 demo, a little bit later on the PlayStation Store when they were releasing the first one, so it would not be surprised if they do something similar for this one. So, yeah. Might want to keep an eye out. Not the world's greatest demo, to be honest.
No. All right. Let's wrap it up, and let's go with our game of the show, Nintendo and non-Tendo. Jared.
My game of the show, Nintendo, is definitely Mario Odyssey. Mm-hmm. The more that I've played it, I've mentioned this recently, but one of my favorite moves in Mario 64 was the dive, diving forward, and, you know, they took it out of subsequent Mario platformers. You know, you can do it in 3D platformers.
Yeah, and I think you could do it in Sunshine, but after that, it was...
Yeah, I think you could sort of do it in Sunshine.
You could dive forward
on
the water or the paint.
Right. But yeah, after Sunshine, it was gone for good. But no, that move is actually back. It's a very unusual. You have to hold ZR, jump in the air, and hold X and A to do kind of dive. And like we were trying to get the guys at Nintendo. We're like, we saw the dive. How do you do it? And like they took a little while to. They got us the information. They were like, this is how you do it. So it's nice that's back. I like when Mario has a crazy arsenal. Yeah. And now with the hat and everything and, like, possessing everything, you can do so many different things. You can be crazy acrobatic. And, like, it just feels nice to control. I think, I don't know if I ever noticed it exactly, but I know some people thought that in the Galaxy games, Mario was a little... his controls just weren't as diverse, and it didn't feel the same as like Sunshine 64. But I feel like he feels like that classic Mario 3D platformer feel. So I'm so excited for that game.
I thought it was really interesting how even the more I saw of that game, I never really got tired of watching, even just watching people play it, because it was always something. There's always something new being discovered, or there was some new area that I hadn't seen them go into. It's like, it's not just like some Mario games where it's like, okay, you've seen, especially in E3, where you're playing the same area over and over again. There just seemed to be there a whole lot more discovery than in some games I've played.
I definitely saw a lot of new things. Like, just the last one I saw, like, you play, Jared, and then Aaron play. I was like, oh, I hadn't seen any of that stuff. Wow. You know?
Yeah.
Granted, I hadn't been, like, watching a lot of people play, but, I mean... There was a ton of stuff in that desert world. I mean, it's just chock full of secrets and stuff. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm really, you know, at first it was like, only six worlds, at least never been disclosed, I think, according to the map. And it might be a little thin in continent. If they're all as deep as like the sand world, man, wow, this could be good.
Yeah.
And you know there's going to be some secret worlds and stuff too. So.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Mike?
Well, I mean, Mario's my game of the show.
Very easy.
Non-Nintendo, honestly, there wasn't a whole... I mean, because of all the lines and stuff, just I didn't get to tinker with much. Not that I usually do.
It's very difficult this year.
I played a few things, none of which I really was that wowed by. Monster Hunter, I didn't play. It was just a live demo, which, I mean, it looks very impressive. I'm not at all really knowledgeable on Monster Hunter, but I think, you know, that's going to be very good when it comes out, just based on what I saw. It was a very engaging environment. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'd go with that, but if it's something that I played... I played something on PS3 I didn't like, though, something Fall.
Matterfall?
Matterfall. I didn't really like that. I didn't realize it was like a twin-stick shooter.
Yeah, it's a very difficult game.
It's like patting your head and rubbing your tummy, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I'm not used to playing four trigger buttons for different controls.
Yeah, you had really complex controls.
So,
sure.
And I played some Hot Shots. What was it? Everyone's Golf, what they're calling this one. It sure is three-button golf. I can't really recommend it just because I didn't like the aesthetic of it. But, you know, if you're a fan of Mario Golf, it's very similar basic gameplay. So, if you have a PS4, you might want to check that out. But I'm not saying it's my favorite non-Nintendo. So, afraid I don't have a good non-Nintendo answer.
Fair enough. I mean, this year...
A function of this year's E3's
layout. Yeah, exactly. You were not playing much if you didn't have a booth appointment. That's really the only reason why we got to Ni No Kuni.
Yeah.
Is because we actually happened to have a Banco booth appointment. For me, game of the show for Nintendo, easily Super Mario Odyssey. Really, it's just really good. I never got tired of watching it. Loved playing it. It's going to be a great entry in the series. For Nintendo, again, I mean, I'm with Mike. Monster Hunter World looks amazing. Of course, it was not playable. They were just playing it in the big theater, which was impressive in and of itself. Because the demo that I watched was slightly different than the demo that Mike saw, because the one that I was watching, the monsters actually started to fight each other like something out of a Godzilla flick.
They did that on mine as well, but it was a slightly different arsenal of monsters. I think I only had one-on-one, whereas apparently yours, there were three monsters all.
Yeah, it was like a battle royale. People didn't even really know how to react to what they were watching. It was incredible. In terms of games I played, I really liked the one Housemarque game that is coming out, I believe, for PS4. Maybe PC, I can't recall. It's called Nex Machina. It's kind of like an overhead shooter, kind of in the mold of Berserk or something like that, and like a twin stick shooter. Also with a little bit of Super Stardust sort of stuff. I like all Hallmark games. Hallmark games would also be cool. I'd love to have them open up a game development label. But yeah. So those are my picks. So that's it.
I didn't say my third party pick of the show.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure I really have one, but I'm gonna go with Sonic Forces. Just I didn't play Sonic Mania, but the E3 demo sort of made me feel better about the game. Some of the early footage I was seeing made me question whether they were again taking just maybe going down the wrong route. Mm-hmm. The 2D sections they had shown for like the Green Hill Zone kind of area in the footage earlier didn't look that great, but actually playing it, they only had a boss battle, but like Sonic's physics actually felt pretty decent. Mm-hmm. And I'll say that I'm looking forward to it.
But it's on a Nintendo platform. Is that non-Nintendo really?
Made by Sega. Is that what you meant, or you meant?
No, I just meant whatever. I mean, that's absolutely fine. I mean, yeah.
Okay, I'm being a jerk by arguing on the podcast. I'm being belligerent.
Yeah, I played Battlefront 2 as well. That was fun. On PC. Yeah, I played it very briefly, but it was cool.
Yeah. I mean, I was very impressed. I mean, I tend to. You know, I get my shots in there with the Sonic franchise, but I was actually impressed by both games. I thought Sonic Forces. I didn't expect anything going in. But I thought it was actually a very, very competent game. I thought the controls were a little bit fiddly. When you were trying to, like, jump over stuff, that was kind of weird. But I really liked it. I mean, I played all three of the stage types. I thought it was really cool. So, any other closing thoughts?
I really hope that they reorganize E3 for next year in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if they're going to uninvite public. this point, but they need to figure out something, whether it's cheapening the floor space or something to, so that, you know, some of the big companies have more floor space to put more kiosks. So someone's got to change,
because
this is not sustainable. That people are going to get burned out and not show up. And it's a mess. I get it. Tokyo Game Show is probably very similar to this.
Yeah.
And that's been going for years and years and years. I find it hard to believe they can do it the same way. Maybe they have a media day. I guess that's what TGS does, right?
That would make a lot of sense.
So I think they got to do something.
Yeah, the problem is just having the public there is great. I think it's great for the show long term. Obviously, they have to make their money off the show. That makes perfect sense. And I always had a problem with E3 kind of being this like secretive thing that, you know, the public can never get into, and you know, it was always kind of silly to me. But at the same time, the media is actually there to do their job, and having the public there just makes things very, very difficult when you literally the only way you have to play a game is waiting in line for 3 hours. So they really need to fix that. They just actually put out the press release that says that there were 68,400 attendees. I don't know how that compares to past years.
It's a lot more.
But that's a lot of people.
That sounds more, but not comparable. Like,
yeah, I thought it was like 50 last year.
Yeah, okay. which would kind of make sense. But yeah. All right, so that's going to wrap us up. That is RFN at E3 2017. Thanks to Jared Rosenberg. Thanks to Michael Cole. Thanks to everybody that has been on and helped us over the last few days. And we will see you next year. Take care, everybody. Cool.